The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Alan Quinlan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
How do you like them apples?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I suppose we're all surprised by the dominance. I certainly believed it was a good performance in Ireland, that they would, play with fire and spirit and a real determination. But it's the accuracy, I suppose, and the way they execute it and the tactics they use throughout the game, I think, which were most impressive.
Listen to Andy Dunn speaking about it afterwards, and that podcast is up on the OTB Podcast Network. He was saying that the number of rooks that we had was far fewer than we've had traditionally at the end of the Joe Schmidt era, and that's a clear evolution in what the team are trying to do from an attacking perspective. That's what we wanted to see, really, was like, what does the Andy Farrell, Mike Catt, Paul O'Connell, Simon Easterby and this crew, what does their team look like? And obviously that's a brilliant performance, but there's a science behind it and there's an architecture behind it that suggests they're trying to do something slightly different.
I suppose we've probably, looking back overall at the tournaments, their success rate at the breakdown has been the most impressive. I think we've seen glimpses of the efficiency that they had under Joe Schmidt. It went awry for a while. If you continuously hold on to the ball, and again, they had more possession on Saturday against England, and they've had that in the five games, more possession in the opposition. And if you're at least holding on to the ball, you're going to get a chance to try and do things with it. And, you know, we've seen glimpses throughout the tournament that they're trying to put more attack and more variety in their attack. But it was probably the execution that let them down in those first two games. And that was probably lines of running and just timing of passes and stuff like that. A lot of teams are fanning out across the field, so you've got to find a way to get through the little space and in tight channels and stuff like that. And when you get into multi-phase, we didn't see that in Murrayfield last week, Ireland getting into enough multi-phase and building a high number of phases. So that's probably what frustrated and asked a lot of those question marks last week about the attack and closing out the game. But one thing I picked up on throughout the whole tournament, and I suppose you can put a positive spin on it when you're in the group, I've been there myself, you're trying to block out the negativity from the outside, but you're trying to get messages out that we do believe in ourselves and we do think we're on the right track. And they've continually said that, and they probably proved it, because you couldn't have produced a performance like that if their confidence was very, very low. Of course, there's pressure, and there's always pressure from match to match at that level. But I think they obviously believed in themselves, and because you can't produce a performance like that on Saturday if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't have that confidence. Because you see evidence in training, Ger, of things actually coming really good. And when you look back at videos, you think if you can find the little situations where somebody should have given a pass or kept the ball alive, and you can highlight that. And, you know, I think Ireland have got better throughout the tournament. And I've always said this about the Six Nations. Sometimes it just hits you with a bang in that first game and you've got to be up and running. And it's hard to do that because of cohesion and lack of time together and all that stuff. So they've certainly improved. But another telling stat that, stats sometimes can hide things, because when I say territory possession, in the first two games against Wales and France, if you look at the territory and possession Ireland have, lots of other stats throughout those games, you think, how do they lose those matches? But it's just execution, and it's finding, in those tight games, finding an opportunity to get a seven-pointer, to score tries. And they did that brilliantly at the start on Saturday. It's a hammer blow to the opposition with Keith Earls' try. And then the try before halftime, incredible. 24 or 5 phases, and the execution and the clean out at the breakdown and the patience was just phenomenal.
So many great performances. Let's tease through them, because Ty Byrne, definitely potentially Irish player of the tournament. It's him or, I mean, I think you got to have Sexton in the conversation, and Robbie Henshaw as well. They were all sensational. But where does Ty Byrne play for Ireland? Is it like wherever he wants, wherever you need him? Is that it now? It's like first name on the team sheet, wherever there's a gap.
Yeah, it depends. Like if James Ryan is back in the second round, I thought Ian Henderson had a really good tournament for a guy who was undercooked coming into it. So Byrne has gone to a level now where you have to select him. For Jack Conan's try, I think he carried the ball four times and throughout the phases there. Phenomenal score just before halftime. The way Ireland kept the ball, and he was big in that. Stander was big. Furlong, lots of big plays. Keane Healy made a couple of big carries there. Sexton carried the ball three or four times himself and was the, you know, crossfield kick, interlinking in his passing. Stockdale twice, Keenan twice. Aki carried it, was a link player at one stage. He was scrum half. Jack Conan carried it three times. You know, it's so many big involvements there. And Byrne was one that, you know, just continuously throughout the whole tournament and throughout this whole game, he's without the ball, he's devastating. So to answer the question, if James Ryan is fit, James Ryan and Henderson start the second row because their form was very good throughout this tournament as well. And Byrne has to play in the back row then. There was a concern and worry going into the game that, you know, Is he powerful enough for the second row? Is he a big second row? He's not a huge second row. He's still a very big man, and he's proved that he can do the job there now. So he was fantastic, as Robbie Henshaw was throughout the tournament. I think if you were to pick the two best players for Ireland throughout the tournament, it was them, followed up by Keith Earls with his performance last week, this week. Johnny Sexton, I think, has been absolutely brilliant. And to see him finishing games as well, it's great to see. So a lot of the older players, Ty Furlong, brilliant as well. And the stat I forgot was, you know, 54 lineouts in the tournament, and they lost six. It's unbelievable, you know, to lose six. Scotland lost six lineouts alone last week against Ireland. To win 54 to have 54 lineouts and only lose six is brilliant. So, you know, having that possession and ability to keep the ball. There's still facets of the game that need to get a lot better. You know, I think even the attack and the execution and the timing of passes, all that kind of stuff needs to be better. And there's a little bit of, you know, they got the emotion right. And why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Your back is to the wall, really. You lose the game Saturday and they're in a really bad place and people will heap more pressure on them. So it's easy to get up for that game. But I think the calmness and the control was really impressive as well, the way they were able to deliver. And, you know, when Bundiaki got sent off, I felt nervous. I felt England will have a surge. They scored straight away, pretty much straight away after the sending off. But then Ireland just took control again and they just went to a different level. So it was a phenomenal performance. They've got to try and build on that now and keep that standard for as long as possible.
It seems that you're pretty confident on where Tadhg Byrne should play over the course of the next little while. But on Robbie Henshaw, is it a little less clear at this point? Because I guess there was some suggestion last week that maybe Chris Farrell goes in because he's more of a 13 and you can just keep Henshaw at 12. Henshaw moves to 13 and plays out of his skin. Does that blow the whole conversation wide open now?
Yeah, it does. But look, there's been a fair bit of chopping and changing in the centre partnerships in the last couple of years on. And look, you can't mask over the fact that we've looked at a lot of games that Ireland have struggled in, and our centre partnership haven't been, they're brilliant individual players, but there just hasn't been that real kind of natural flow to what they're doing. And, you know, do you go back to Bundiaki now and Robbie Henshaw? And, well, I suppose you're only as good as your last game, and that game, both of them were brilliant. I think that, you know, obviously, for Bundiaki getting sent off was incredibly disappointing personally for him, because I thought it was a harsh one, even though, look, letter of the law, there's contact there. But I thought he was brilliant as well, Aki, and he kind of laid down a marker of with his performance. Chris Farrell last week, I was thinking play Chris Farrell and try and get him into the team because he's a very good passer. So they've got to keep working on it and try and, you know, understand one bad performance again. If we had another match next week, we, you know, it opens up a can of worms again. But hopefully they'll have a summer tour now. But I don't know. Henshaw was brilliant at 12 and then he moves to 13 and he's brilliant. So that would suggest that he has to start, whether it's 12 or 13, and hopefully Gary Ringrose will find his form. Gary Ringrose is too good a player to leave out of the Irish team. His form has been dipped. So they're all very, very good players. But I think it's down to Mike Catt and the way they play and finding the best players to do that job, because I think they can all do a job. And going back to the World Cup, when Chris Farrell came on against Scotland, he was brilliant. So he's a very good player as well. There's four of them there, and they're all top-class players. You could end up playing Henshaw and Aki together and having Gary Ringrose on the wing or as a full-back or something like that. Who knows, depending on injuries and who's available. But you have to try and find a position and get Gary Ringrose out on the field, because when the game opens up, he's devastating and can be devastating.
And can be brilliant in defence as well, and is brilliant in defence. And that's one of the other things that popped up at the weekend, Alan, was the individual brilliance when England had the ball from Henshaw again. Was that down to him just being in unbelievable form, or was it down to a defensive form itself or a defensive system itself? What was the newest development you saw on Saturday?
Well, like I say, you try and fix these things as when you're in the group and you look back in the videos, and I think Simon Eastwee deserves a huge amount of credit for that, the way they defended against England, the way they, you know, won a lot of those collisions. They stopped England getting over the gain line. You know, Billy Vunipola tried to carry a lot and he just got stopped at source. You're always going to get a team that get a yard or two here and there, but the vast majority of the time, Ireland stayed very well connected in defence. They weren't as passive as they were against Scotland last week, particularly in the last 15 minutes last weekend in Murrayfields. So they would have looked at that. Plus, we hadn't individual errors. We hadn't guys shooting out of the line. There wasn't a disconnect. There wasn't... They looked like they were solid together. They knew what the inside defender was doing. Obviously, with no crowd there, and I'm there doing the commentary, you can hear the communication and nominating players in defence. And that was impressive. So Simon Easterby got it right as well with his defence on Saturday, and he deserves credit for that. But, you know, good players can see this stuff and know the mistakes. You know, you step in or you step out of the line in a match. You know yourself as a player. Players inside or outside, you'll let you know as well when you mess up. So they've sorted that out themselves. And so it wasn't any huge, huge change that we'd seen. Probably the change we saw on Saturday was better connection in defence and getting off the line quicker. But again, it's something, if they didn't do that against England, particularly when they're under pressure in that first 15 minutes, England would have really punished them and hurt them. So they stopped England. And then they made good reads with Robbie Henshaw. That little wraparound play where he smothers up George Ford. They're telling moments in a match. And you could see the reaction from the Irish players. Even a couple of times they held him up in mauls in the tackle and got turnovers from a maul. It all went pretty well for them.
What next? What's the, you know, what's the bit of evolution that comes next to make sure that this isn't one of those little isolated islands of victories that we have? You know, because Irish rugby is full of these, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier on, you know, where next year is our traditional year where we do really well. Maybe we win a Grand Slam the year before World Cup and think that all in the world is amazing. But what's the next stage where this, we wanted progress in terms of the game plan, we wanted strength and depth, we wanted some evolution, and we've got, you know, you're definitely leaning towards a positive report card for the management structure and for the leadership group and for some of the young players coming through. So what's next for this team?
What's next is to try and get more players into the squad and caps. I think 9 and 10 are still the depth chart there. A lot of uncertainty there. You know, Sexton goes off early in that game on Saturday. It's a different story, maybe. Billy Burns, could he cope with that pressure? Maybe he could when he comes on, but the reality is there's a difference there. You know, Gibson Park has shown glimpses throughout the tournament and he's very, very good sniping with the ball, taking a step off the breakdown. Conor Murray did what you want him to do on Saturday perfectly. Just got the ball away into Sexton's hands quickly, kicked really well. you know, if those players are out and both were missing against France, it's a different story, unfortunately. Their leadership as well. So for Andy Farrell, it's developing more leaders. That game is a huge game. You can get so much confidence and self-belief and look back on that, but they've got to use it now in the right way. You've got to get Carberry back in the squad. Can Craig Casey step up to the next level and get consistency there and be a real kind of challenger for that number nine for Ireland? Getting Harry Byrne into the squad. Robert Balakoon from Ulster. I think he's someone who just has incredible X factor and finishing ability. And there's a lot of other young players. You know, Ryan Baird, can he challenge for that second row spot? Get more depth there. Another area probably is, you know, for Ronan Kelleher's development. I think Rob Herring has been brilliant, but he's not a, you know, he hasn't effectively, you know, made ball carries. But I watched back in the game a couple of times, and in fairness to Rob Herring, didn't make a lot of carries, but he's work around the field and the fitness and the clearing out on rucks and the supporting players being first or second player in there to clear out a ruck was phenomenal. His work rate is through the roof, and the lineouts darts were really good. You know, probably the loose head spot is another area that, you know, unfortunately for Dave Kilcoyne, he went off so early, we didn't get to see the best of himself there and on Saturday. But Keane Healy was really good when he came on. So look, every team can go through positions. Probably the areas that we really need to address are 9 and 10. So it's, in an ideal world, in the next phase or year and a half before the World Cup, is having, you know, a lot of young exuberance coming through into the squad and talent. And there's a fair bit of talent out there, but it doesn't make everything perfect now that we beat England, because Scotland beat England as well. Wales beat England. So England have been shockingly bad, and they really surprised me on Saturday, because I think last week, and you know, their finish in that second half against France was very impressive. So still plenty to work on for sure, and if I was Andy Farrell, I'd be trying to see who's the next line or list of players that we can bring in and have a look at.
Is Eddie Jones still the right man to coach England?
Well, they say he is, but I think tactically England are very, very blunt. They kick the leather off the ball. They try overpower teams. And, you know, the game evolves every couple of years, Jeremy. You know, teams probably are figuring out what Ireland experienced 2 years ago against England in the first game of the Six Nations 2019, where England just smothered Ireland into submission, overpowered them and kicked a lot. And they try and play in the opposition half and force mistakes. They've got to add a little bit more. You've probably one of the best wingers in the world in Johnny May, and he's probably not getting the ball enough. I really thought it was telling on Saturday when at one stage in the second half, Ben Youngs just box kicked the ball up the middle of the field. I was really shocked and surprised at that. You're chasing a game and you're just kicking it away. So it shows that, you know, when you're out in the field and the pressure there, you kind of go back to the safety net of, well, this is what we're used to. So England kicked the ball a huge amount as well. Doesn't take away from the fact that Ireland overkicked at times in those early games as well. But is he the right man for the job? I think there's way more pressure on him now. And I think, but there seems to be a patience there we can't get carried away with this, because England will learn a lot from this. I think they probably need to make some changes to look at the more senior players as well. They'll always have a conveyor belt of players coming through because of the depth chart they have. But he's under pressure now. But it depends what happens in the summer, you know, and what happens next November with internationals and stuff. But if they go on a run of losing matches, I think people will lose patience with him.
On Wales then, Alan, I mean, the team of the tournament, really, and to lose the Grand Slam in such a manner would be absolutely gut-wrenching from their perspective. Could they have done anything more? Let's start with that perspective. Could they have done anything more with the clock in the red and France bearing down on them at the weekend?
I think it's the penalties they gave away, but it's easy to kind of just pick the penalties and say that, you can avoid them. They're very, very difficult. I think they tried to be cynical. Liam Williams tried to get back on his feet. And I look back on that when he got yellow carded. And it was harsh. It was harsh. The game went crazy, didn't it, in the last kind of 10 minutes. But up to that point, for 70 minutes, Wales were brilliant. I think the reaction, the scores they got, the way they played, and they really believed they could win. But France are just sensational. I think they, and surprisingly, their composure and their control against everything that was going on, with the Willems sending off, the ball being knocked on, them losing it in contacts. You know, Wales had the ball at the end, and we give out about, we questioned Jamieson Gibson Parr kicking the ball away in the 78th minute last week. Wales held on to it, and Corey Hill goes off his feet, and they get penalised for sealing off. There's always a chance that that will happen. When I think of the sealing off right at the end of the game, you go back to 2013 when Ireland were ahead against New Zealand, and Nigel Owens penalised Jack McGrath for going off his feet, rightly so, and New Zealand score in the corner. It reminded me of that. Wales had the ball. They just probably had over a minute to play it out, and they give away the penalty. And then France, the execution for that try at the end was sublime. The way Gael Ficou kind of straightened, hesitated for a sec, held the Welsh defence, gave the pass then, and Doolan scored was sensational. It was unbelievable. But you have to feel for Wales. They did so much right in that game and were so close to probably to winning a Grand Slam that nobody would have predicted before the start of the tournament. I thought they, you know, we all thought that they would really struggle, but they started well, you know, getting the first two wins against the odds that they probably didn't deserve, and they improved so much throughout the tournament. But it was a crazy finish, and I suppose justifiably so, France, because I think they're such a good team. They're probably the team that should be going for a Grand Slam. They're the best team in the tournament, I think.
I'm really, really devastated for poor Wales. I have so much sympathy coursing through every capillary of my blood this morning. It's a disaster. It's terrible for them. They really, you know, they've been robbed. Fabien Galthié actually came out very, very interestingly, and Pivac and his backroom team refused to comment on this because they were like, oh, look, I haven't seen the translation for this. But essentially, and Reggie Corrigan was saying this in commentary as well, like, the Welsh are very good at annoying the opposition to the point where the opposition feel like they have to do something illegal around the breakdown. The body language was what Galthié was talking about, getting teams sent off. I've no doubt that it was a red card the other night, but it came at the end of like a 10-minute period where Wales had been offside, lying, not rolling out of the way, slowing everything down. And maybe that's why Williams ultimately gets yellow carded. Somebody else's yellow card. They're just giving it to him. But if there'd been a penalty given, that red card wouldn't have happened because the opportunity, the need to roll from Williams, it wouldn't have happened. I can see why teams get very upset playing against the Welsh. It's genius dark arts when it works, but it's so on the edge that it can backfire against you in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it can. But look, I think most teams, if they were under that sort of pressure, would be close to the edge there of trying to do something, come up with a play. And it's very, very difficult in the heat at the moment. Wales are very, very competitive, and they have a lot of experienced players. And what would I do if I was a Welsh player there? I'd be probably doing the exact same thing, trying to come up with a big play. And that's the chance you take. But they were probably... And again, don't give away a try, give away a penalty. I think, you know, that even though it's probably Alan Wynne-Jones is not shutting that out, all the Welsh players know that. So that's good play if you're on the Welsh side. And it nearly worked for them. Us having a conversation saying they're very cynical. I know Reggie was saying in commentary, it's probably apparent there, and it would frustrate the life out of if you're a French player or a French fan. But all teams can do that and know when to do that. But
they will get a reputation now, though, because the coaching tickets week in, week out in the advance with those meetings with the referees are going to be like, watch out for this, look at this. And I can see it coming.
The difference is now, Ger, a lot of this stuff has been really policed heavily now. The offside lines, the in from the side, the sealing off. The Willems, the clean out was very unfortunate. I think you got to give credit to Wayne Barnes and Luke Pearce for picking it up. Barnes picked it up first. I don't think there's no intention there. He tries to clear the player out. He's gone past him and puts the arm back to try and move him out of the way. Fabian Galthié is saying, I suppose, in the context of what he said, that they tried to get players red cards. I think that's not the case. There's no way to do that. They do. They are cynical and it can really frustrate you, which can lead to the opposition getting frustrated. But you've got to keep your discipline at that level. And you just felt at times that nothing was going right for France, that last-ditch tackles, holding players up, they were saving the day. And again, they had the job done. But Luke Pearce probably should have, before the Willem, so I do agree with that, he should have penalised earlier, blown it up for a penalty or a yellow card to one of the Welsh players there. But overall, I think, look, as I said, I do the exact same myself. And Wales have been, you know, they've, of course they're going to be competitive. They're going to be on the edge. They have to be.
Yeah, they are, sorry.
To just, be successful.
And they've been absolutely brilliant. Their skill level under execution, the discovery of new talent, the ability to merge that old team with those young players has been absolutely sensational. Wales are reborn and are now, I would argue, one of the most dangerous teams in world rugby. The worst takeaway about this from the Six Nations from an Ireland perspective is we all feel like we're finishing on a bit of a high, but it's been a sensational France performance where all their flakiness is gone and Wales are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why the game was so good. The way Wales approached that game the other night, they didn't try and contain France. They kept playing and believed they could attack them and take them on. And they did that brilliantly. You know, when France had 15 players in the field, they had them under massive pressure. So they've grown in confidence and top players. Then look at George North, the way he's played throughout the tournament. So many question marks about his form. Reece Zammit has been the find of the season for any team. I think he was, you know, if I was picking a Lions team now, he's starting straight away. He's sensational. Jonathan Davies coming back from long-term injury. Dan Biggar, who I know well, he's a real warrior. He's kind of like Sexton Farrell with the temperament. Question marks about him. He's been brilliant for him. The competitive edge of him. Tipperick, you know, Josh Navidi. Faletau, I thought, was incredible the other night. So good for Wales the other night. Alwyn Jones had a great tournament. Ken Owen. So they're all big players who found form. And when they put on that Welsh jersey, we've said it so many times over the years, they just come together and they're top quality players. And you're picking a Lions team now, there's a good few Welsh players in it because their consistency throughout the tournament and the ability to get the job done. Incredibly unfortunate. But the impressive thing, as I said, for France was their composure. They usually capitulate when they're under that sort of pressure and all that kind of stuff is going wrong. So it was incredibly impressive at the end, the way they were able to keep going, get those two late tries and win the game. They probably should have beaten England last week as well. They didn't have that kind of ability to see out the game from Jalibert last week and Dupont himself. But France have been the best team. They've probably been the team that have impressed me most. And I think they're going to be such a threat if Galthié can keep these guys together and on the right track for 2023 at the World Cup.
Yeah, and it's great that we're slated to meet them as well. Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers. We'll talk to you during the week.
Cheers, lads.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm On The Go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.